And I'm going to hand the gavel to Representative Nelson because I'm going to go around to the witness table for the bill that we're doing informational.
For cross-examination?
No, sir, not for cross-examination.
Good morning, members of the government committee. I open this informational hearing at this time on House Bill 2148. Welcome, Chair Representative Crummell. It's nice to have you here today, and we're anxious to hear from you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it, and I appreciate being here and the committee taking the time this morning. I'm going to make this pretty brief so that we'll be able to end our meeting in a fairly short period of time. What I wanted to do this morning is just introduce some of the concepts on House Bill 2148. House Bill 2148 is a budget reform bill. While it may not be absolutely necessary for us to put the budget model that we use in state government into the statutes, I do think that it is a good idea that we do put it into the statutes. And the reason is that I think it's very easy for agencies and for us as legislators to become confused as far as different types of nomenclature that might be utilized, such as current service level budgeting, performance-based budgeting, zero-based budgeting, outcomes-based budgeting. I mean, there's a whole slew of different terms that are utilized. And I think by putting it into the statute, it will make it very clear to us as legislators and to future legislators, as well as to the governor and to the agencies and future agency heads and future governors, as far as the type of budget model that has been used. Over the past 14 or 15 years, a budget model known as current service level budgeting is what has been utilized. I don't know, actually, if this has actually ever been put into the statutes. I don't believe that it has. But it has become the accepted method of doing business. And as you know, I have been a big critic over the past number of years in current service level budgeting, because one of the assumptions that it makes is that every program that we have is going to be continued, even if it's been noted in the statute as a temporary program, and then they keep going. And it's also assumed that there will be budget increases just based on available revenues being increased. What this budget model does is that it instructs the legislature and the agencies and the governor in how to actually construct the budget. It would, because of the effective date that this would take effect, there is not an emergency clause on it. It would actually not take effect until the 2005-2007 budget year. However, I think that if we can move this through the process as we are preparing the legislatively adopted budget for the 2003-2005 biennium, we could utilize some of the principles that are in here, even though we wouldn't be bound by state law to do so. What I'd like to do is just introduce some of the concepts that are in the bill and go through it very briefly, and then I'll be glad to entertain any questions that the committee might have. In Section 2, which is really where sort of the guts of the bill begin, what it calls for is a 5-year strategic financial plan for the state. And you might ask, well, why a 5-year plan and not a 6-year plan? And quite frankly, that number can be adjusted up or down. I'm not real concerned about that. 5-year was chosen because when I was mayor of Wilsonville and we did a budget reform in that city, we chose a 5-year window of time. So we could instead go by bienniums, and so we're not married to that. But the idea is that the state set out, with the assistance of the Department of Administrative Services, a strategic plan for how we will utilize resources that are coming into us. In In doing so, you'll note, starting on about line 23 there on page 1, it talks about the Department of Administrative Services and that they'll review the economic, political, demographic, and social factors affecting the state, which of course affect revenues and resources that we will have available, describe problems and opportunities the state may encounter during the period for which the plan is being prepared, formulate statements of general goals, and what I would envision in this is more utilization of work that has been done and is being done by the Oregon Progress Board, and then describe specific achievements that are to be realized. And this is where you start getting into setting benchmarks for agencies as far as the work that they will be doing during the biennium period. Turning the page in on page 2, starting at line 2, formulate and recommend strategies for achieving the goals and objectives, and then balancing the need for keeping public facilities and services at adequate levels for a growing population, with the need to purchase land at lowest possible cost for future facilities and other such needs. The strategic financial plan requires long-term financial goals and objectives, program priorities, and for the period of which the budget is prepared, a determination of the appropriate levels of contingency reserves, and as many of you know, I've been a big critic in the fact that we have only used our ending fund balance as a reserve, and that does not allow the managers of the budgets at the lower levels to be able to plan for and keep reserves in case something may come up in their program that they would need to be able to utilize resources for. And I think that one of the things that we need to do as we move through this and when we are moving into a different budget model is to empower our employees to do the right thing. And I think that we do that when a budget manager, say the since I'm most familiar with athletics, the athletic department at one of our universities wants to have a contingency reserve to utilize in case some type of an emergency comes up, whether it be capital or operational, that they be allowed to hold back some money for reserves without the fear of losing those reserves at the end of the year or at the end of the biennium period. And then a determination of appropriate capital levels of capital reserves and policies for recovery of costs. So in where there are services that are provided by the state where there's a cost associated to the person being served, then a plan for recovery of those costs. And then recommended service levels and a determination of the cost-benefit ratio for those services. So that's kind of the big guts, I guess, of the bill. It does instruct in Section 3 to develop a capital improvement program, and that would be for all of our different facilities that the state owns in terms of remodeling projects that may need to be done, other types of capital expenditures that may need to be accomplished, putting roofs on when repairs are needed, making adjustments to the facility when those facilities need to be adjusted in some way. And then Section 4 just describes that for any capital construction project that there will be a project manager and that reports will be given to the legislature as well as the governor with regards to the process and progress of any capital construction projects. And then jumping into Section 5, it starts talking about what the governor will do and what the agencies will do in terms of reporting their budgets. And that the budget report by the governor will have goals and objectives set forth in strategic financial plan, noted in Section 2, and that the governor requires the directors and other agency heads to integrate performance measures for operating efficiency, operating effectiveness, citizen satisfaction, human resource efficiency into the budget request. And then also that they will tie service levels to any funding requests. And then there's a point there in subsection 3 beginning on line 11 of page 3 that talks about the Department of Administrative Services and having a budget control system. and being able to provide summary reports to the legislature as far as amounts that are appropriated, and then how the performance levels and actual results relate back to the amount of money that's been appropriated. So we can follow what an agency, and this is going to actually give us as a legislature more oversight in terms of how agencies are utilizing their resources. In Section 6, it talks about revenue management policies for the state. There are dedicated funds, and it talks about utilizing those for only the purpose of which they're collected. Not utilizing one-time revenue sources for continuing activities. And carefully and efficiently managing the collection of revenue so that whenever necessary, going into utilizing the services of private collection agencies, foreclosures, liens, discontinuation of services, and so on, to make sure that tax collections are keeping up. We don't have people lagging behind. In Section 7, it talks about the debt structure of the state and making sure that we're maintaining a balance from the standpoint of not allowing ourselves to get overly indebted. I had a question yesterday from a member of the press, and he said, so if you did it, in Section 6 and 7, if you would have done that a few years ago, we wouldn't be in the position that we're in today. And that is partially true. We could not have necessarily overcome the amount of the downturn in the economy that Oregon has suffered in the last 2 years. But the one thing that we would have been is we would have been better prepared for it, so that as we were going through the budgeting process, for example, in the 01 session, we would have recognized better that we were going to have a problem, and we would have enabled ourselves, I think, to put more money back so that as the revenues started to lag because of people being out of work and capital gains suffering and that sort of thing, we would have recognized it, and we would not have had a false level of expectations with our agencies and with the people that are being served by services of the state. Section 8 talks about developing and maintaining a plan that allows the state to respond to significant shortfalls of anticipated state revenues, and maintaining reserve accounts, and maintaining maintenance accounts for all of our facilities. Section 9 talks about a capital asset replacement fund, and what that is primarily referring to is that if we recognize that in a period of time, whatever that period of time is, that a capital asset is going to have to be replaced, then we start building a reserve. We allow our budget managers to build a reserve to replace those capital assets so that when the time comes for the asset to be replaced, the money is available in a fund for the agency or for the budget manager to be able to utilize those funds, so it doesn't create a drain on their budget during any one biennium. And then jumping ahead to page 6 in the bottom of the page, and it talks about line 36 talks about performance measures showing progress toward accomplishing goals and objectives, and the budget plan and what happens with unobligated amounts of money, and that only, and it sets a cap on unobligated funds. So a budget manager cannot reserve greater than 5% of their dollars for a reserve fund. And that, members, is the crux of the bill. This is a model that I know has worked in the public sector before, because I've done it in the public sector when I was mayor of the city of Wilsonville. And I think that it's a budget model that we can modify and make it work for us, so that we don't set false levels of expectations by the people being served, but people and that the budget managers understand exactly what the expectations of the legislature are on them when they are providing services to the people of the state. I would also mention that this bill, I know, is going to go through an amendment process, and I welcome those. This was dropped as a committee bill by the House Interim Committee on General Government. And in putting this together, I knew that that we would need to make amendments to it, and that there's other things that we may want to add into it. And I welcome those, and I welcome members of the public to keep track of this and to offer suggestions and voice concerns, as well as members of the legislature, the governor, agencies. This is one of those things that we don't want to set this up for failure. What we want to do is set this up for success, so that the expectations of the people of the state of Oregon can be met with the resources that they entrust to us. With that, I'll end and be glad to take any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much, Representative Crummell. Members, questions?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Have we done any analysis as to what additional costs we might be incurring by going to this type of budget process?
No, we have not done. I have not had any kind of an analysis done. I know that in the 99 session, when I introduced this type of a budget model, Department of Administrative Services, let me just call them DAS for shortness sake, did come in, and Teresa McHugh did come in and visit with me some about some of the things that were in here and how they would work and that sort of thing. But we never did any kind of actual analysis as far as whether there would be an increased cost or reduced cost to moving into this type of a model.
Yes, sir.
A couple other questions. Being a five-year strategic plan, is there a cycle or that you vision for keeping that 5 years out, or are we looking at setting for 5 years and then at the end of the 5 years doing another strategic plan?
That's an excellent question, Representative, Madam Chair, and Representative Przanski. I would envision it as being a rolling period. So, and like I said, whether we left it at 5 years or moved it to some other type of a period, but that it would be a rolling period, so that every 2 years you're basically updating the plan, so that you still know 5 years out or 6 years out, whatever time frame we've chosen, that these are things that we need to be aware are coming down the pike at us. The other thing is that by keeping it as a rolling amount, it allows us the flexibility as legislators and the governor, the flexibility to be able to say, okay, this is something we recognize doesn't work, so we're going to move it out. This is something else that we want to try, we're going to move it in. And so it gives us the flexibility to adjust the plan as time moves forward. So every legislative session, I would anticipate, every regular legislative session, I would anticipate that there would be adjustments to the plan, both in the short term and in the longer range.
One other question, if I may.
Go right ahead, Representative Kavinsky.
Did you also insinuate that this may not be the exclusive model that would be used by the different departments, or was this something that you were thinking that this would be the current, our current service level budgeting would be the process that we would require of all agencies as well as the governor in establishing their budgets?
Madam Chair and Representative Przanski, no, this would become the budget model, and there may be some, and that's why I mentioned that there might be some other adjustments to this as far as how we're actually formulating it, but that this bill or a bill like it would create the a budget model that we would subscribe to and that we would follow on a statewide basis, and that we would eliminate, as the governor has talked about, eliminate the current service level model altogether.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions? Well, then, Representative Crummell, you know I have 200 questions because this is my area of intense interest from last session, which I know you supported me in many of the activities, and I was delighted when Governor Kulongoski likewise supported me in moving us away from the current service level, which appears to be unlike a majority of our constituents. I'd just like first to ask, and I appreciate Representative Brzezinski asking costs, because, of course, that was my first question. In this document, I'm wondering, I have, you know, several bills that I have had drafted regarding the zero-based budgeting bill with performance measurement that Senator Bill Morissette and I sponsored in a nonpartisan or bipartisan effort, and which passed in the House committee, the House and the Senate committee unanimously, and then did not get heard in the Senate with Senator Durfer. I'm just wondering, is there a reason you did not incorporate zero-based budgeting in this bill?
What I thank you for the question, Madam Chair. What I wanted to do is lay out a structure to begin with, and then and at least start the conversation from a standpoint of what sorts of ideas or what sorts of actual language should be incorporated. Whether we should go to a strict zero-based type of model, I think there's room in this bill to do that, if that's the choice of the body. If we want to, and if we're going to set up performance levels, then how do we set those up? And I think that's probably language that needs to be added in terms of what structure we're going to use, whether it's the Oregon Progress Board and some of the benchmark report that they do every session for us, which my understanding from Jeff Tyrens is that it will be out in March of this year. So I've tried to do with this is just set out a basic structure, and then understanding that there's going to be adjustments made within that.
Representative Crummell, what I wonder is, since this is almost a total revamping of the way we do business with the state, are we headed the right direction if we put it all under one bill, or is it better, for example? I mean, I think we would want to discuss the different various types, the three various types of budgeting, which are used, among the 50 states, and most of them use a little bit of each, but most moving because of this recent recession to zero-based budgeting, which I've just recently found out to be the major portion of the process. Would it be best if we had a series of bills relative to different, aspects of this bill, or have a total plan in one? Is my question.
That's a very good question, Madam Chair. And of course, as we all know, once we walk into the building as members, politics is the art of the possible. And I guess if it's possible to get it's kind of like buying a Cadillac or buying a Chevrolet. If you can get all of the features that you want in the one car, then that's what you do. And if not, then sometimes you have to buy two different vehicles. And so I think it's going to depend really on how we determine as a body that we want to structure our budget models and the instructions that we want to be giving to our agencies. I think that from a standpoint of the agencies, as long as the direction that they get from us is clear and concise and to the point, then I think that's what's most important. So whether it be done in one bill or whether it be done through utilizing several bills, to me is a very minor and in some respects inconsequential issue. What I would not want to have happen is that we put together a package, and let's say it's three or four bills, and that we don't that has the instructions that we want to give to the agencies, and only one or two of the bills actually make it completely through the process, and the other bills don't make it. I think that's when you have separate bills, that's a danger that you run. But from a standpoint of whether or not it should be just one bill, one sort of omnibus bill, or several, or cut up into several pieces. That to me is a question that we'll kind of answer as we're going through the process. I think that the relating clause on the one bill is probably broad enough because it's relating to state finance and creating new provisions. I think that it is broad enough that we can probably put any pieces that we want into one piece of legislation. But there again, I'm not concerned about whether it's one piece or five pieces.
Thank you for that answer. My further concern for this issue, members of the committee, is that I believe we need to hear from the governor, since he has clearly said that current service level is no more, as I understand. Perhaps we need to have him present his concepts here, and I would like to have recognized the 20 items I have submitted to your office for various hearings, informational hearings, primarily to bring our new members up to date on many of the issues we previously discussed in last session, and then ran out of time because we ran out of money, which is fortunate we ran out of time. I believe that in order to really develop a bill of this stature, that we are going to require numerous work sessions and numerous informational hearings from all the agencies. For example, in the last session, we did not have two budget bills presented in the same context. To further describe that, we had not one bill that clearly delineated the overhead of an agency. In fact, in drafting my bill to requiring entities to let us know what the overhead is, so our constituents, primarily those working outside of government, would understand how we look at overhead from a business view, the state agencies have not had to present that. So, but the question that seems to keep coming up from our constituents, and it did at my large town hall meeting last night on Measure 28, was, well, what is the overhead of DHS? And I said, I have no clue. And then we went into education. I have no clue, and to me that's everything that, outside of the actual operation that we require of that agency. So I don't see that in here. So I think, in order for us to move in the right direction, that, that's a totally foreign subject to the agencies. And once somebody, DAS or LCO or whoever it is, has gotten together and said, here's our definition of overhead, I think it's very important for us to begin to understand that, because as we talk about measurement, we'd be talking about two different types. We're talking about operational measurement, how successful, are we in meeting the needs of the people in the actual operations, for example, mm-hmm. versus how effective has, management been in overseeing the operation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad that you brought that up. I have asked my staff to let me talk about the governor first. I have asked my staff to schedule a time for me to go and visit with the governor about some of these issues, and understanding that he has stated that current service level budgeting is going to end. I will seek input and from the governor and his staff with regards to how we can make this kind of a model work, what sorts of pitfalls he may see with regards to how this is structured and put together, and also understanding the concepts that he's willing to support, that he's not willing to support, and so on. With regards to the numbers of informational hearings, you're absolutely right. This is not something that this is expressly why this bill was scheduled today as an informational and introductory hearing. I'm wanting to our committee introduce the concepts and recognize the fact that this is something that over the course of the next few weeks we're going to be addressing and talking about. I have not sat down and completely gone through the list that you submitted to my office, but will be, and then I'll be working with our committee administrator to schedule informational hearings relative to different budget models. I can tell you that on the National Conference of State Legislatures website, there is an abundance of information available about what the other states are doing with regards to the types of budget models that they utilize, how they define overhead, how they define zero-based budgeting, what types of performance levels they look at, how to tie service levels to revenues and available resources. You know, there is just a plethora of information that's available there. NCSL has done a tremendous amount of work in this area. There are many states that have moved to this type of a budget model and have been very satisfied, and feel like the people that they serve have been very satisfied with some of the outcomes that they're getting. And this is an issue that it doesn't matter what your political ideology is, whether from a standpoint of, and this is not meant to be an attack on anything, but rather a way of saying we know that we can do better, and let's figure out collectively what those are. What those things are that we can do better, and what kind of a model we can utilize that will enhance the services and enhance our ability as a state to respond to the needs of the people in the state of Oregon. So I recognize that this is going to be a long process. It's not one that I'm anticipating. That's one of the reasons why we didn't schedule this for public hearing and work session today. It is going to, and as I mentioned, there will be many times that we'll have people coming before us. I plan to talk after visiting with the governor, to visit with the director and staff at DAS, as well as some of our other agencies, to see how we can, what sorts of things we need to do to be able to, from their perspective, to be able to put this together. As I said, I want to line this up for success and not failure.
I appreciate that answer very much. I don't want to preempt any other questions from the committee, but I'll continue until y'all interrupt me. My next question relates to input from the public. At the forum last night, it was a perfect time. I took the governor's budget and presented it. This forum we had was for the developmentally disabled primarily, regarding Measure 28 and if it passed and didn't pass. And one of my precious constituents said or asked, well, now that's the governor's budget, now what's the process for having this come to some culmination? Well, the truth is we don't have one. We have a we have our subcommittees on Ways and Means, we have our policy committees, but as far as to clearly define what are the priorities of the state as far as provide which services to our constituents with what designated funding, there is no absolute procedure or administrative rule, as I now believe I know. So my concern is also, how do we ask the public, what information and in what form would you better understand, the use, the determination of the use of, and the actual, use of your taxpayer paying dollars? and I wonder how we could go about getting that input from the public regarding these concepts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that, first of all, speaking to priorities, one of the other bills that was submitted by the House Interim Committee on General Government is, I believe it's noted as HCR1, and HCR1 is a resolution that we could pass as a body. Again, I know that it's probably going to need to be amended, but would set out broad priorities from a standpoint of this legislative session, saying what we're, how we're going to budget, what our priorities are, and it talks about constitutional mandates very broadly. It talks about constitutional mandates, federal mandates, and then state mandates, or mandates that we've put on ourselves. And of course, the third category is the one that we can really adjust. For example, it is now a constitutional mandate that there will be an education rainy day fund, if you will, and that the way that fund is utilized, or excuse me, is there's resources put into that fund. It describes it in the Constitution that it will be 15% of the lottery proceeds will go into that fund. It further states how those funds can be utilized, how we as a legislature can access the dollars that are in that fund, and what sorts of economic parameters are set out. That's another educational constitutional mandate that we now have, is that we will adequately fund our education system. I mean, that occurred with Measure 5 in 1990. So as we look through the Constitution, we also have a constitutional mandate to adequately fund our courts and our public safety system. So those are just a couple of examples. From a federal mandate standpoint, we have a mandate from the federal government, for example, for Medicaid. That now Medicaid in Oregon is the Oregon Health Plan, or is it the Oregon Health Plan is Medicaid, depending on how you want to look at it. But the fact of the matter is that is a state federal program. 60% of the money comes from the federal government in order to fund the Medicaid program or Oregon Health Plan. That's a federal mandate. Where we get into trouble is that if we don't provide our state match, then the federal government cuts back on the amount of money that they send. So we have to include that in our budgeting process. And then finally would be a state mandate. For example, the Willamette River Initiative. That is something that we put on ourselves. Now there are some federal aspects to that based on the Endangered Species Act and the Clean Water Act and that sort of thing, but the bottom line is that's an initiative that we put on ourselves, and how do we fund that? I would not suggest, by the way, that the Willamette River Initiative should be eliminated as far as funding is concerned. So please don't misunderstand my comments there. I'm just using that as an example of a state law mandate that we've placed on ourselves as far as funding is concerned. So we do need to articulate to the public what our priorities are, and I think that we can do that through the use of the media, through the use of informational meetings that we might have around the state, through each one of us going back to our districts and talking about what priorities should be, asking the public what they think the priorities should be, and that sort of thing. With regards to this piece of legislation, it does enumerate, as I mentioned, I believe in Section 3 and 4, the priorities and how those priorities are set out and how they are tied to and how revenues or resources are tied to service levels.
Well, thank you, Representative Cremo, for the benefit of the committee. You know, we also have constitutional requirements to provide imprisonment as well as full-time employment for our inmates. Next, the only social service that we're required to provide is to take care of the foster children who are in our care. So other than that, you know, besides the federal mandates, it's my understanding we have no other social service requirements, which seems strange. And, you know, of course, I have opinions as what I think are the priorities, should be the priorities of our state, and which ones should have designated funding at a certain level. And the first one, of course, is public safety and security. And to me, that would, you know, determine how many individuals we need to have in law enforcement to keep that at a certain level, you know, or how many justices or, you know, prisons or programs for protecting, you know, our society. Secondly, we do have this obligation, as you mentioned, from K to 12 for only that education. Of course, I think it should include Head Start, you know, not 50%, but 100%, you know, because those kids are, you know, are behind. And then the federal program, but we also have a requirement to PERS. And, you know, that's one that was, you know, put in later, and, you know, that's the last one beyond the ones that we've just discussed. But my concern is, like, in the area of Department of Health and Human Services, you know, I think we should, you know, take care of the senior citizens, the disabled, the developmentally delayed, you know, our veterans, you know, the hungry, the homeless, you know, I think, you know, our fragile individuals in society. But we have nothing in the budget process that says we will take care of those people, and the funding source is going to come from, you know, here. So I'm concerned that we're going to proceed with this budget, and we're saying, well, this process, you know, is going to take effect in, you know, 2005 to 2007. We can't wait. I mean, the hungry are going to starve. We're going to continue to be number one in hunger, which is, you know, in my opinion, the worst disgrace the state could possibly have. And then when we talk about, you know, hearing issues of cutting security in an age of terrorism, I mean, that's a mandate already. That is a constitutional requirement. So why are we speaking of releasing prisoners and cutting state police to a level that, you know, makes our state insecure? So I'm concerned about already, it appears to me, you know, there have been priorities that our fragile senior citizens, we're sending them, you know, in the wheelchairs, you know, out of their housing to the street, you know, for someone else to take care of it. I think it's a disgrace. So I'm concerned about how we get these priorities, at least a portion of this bill, in effect now and immediately, so it is included in this current budget process. If we don't get to the refinement of zero-based budgeting, we can do two things. We can consider the growth factors of the state, the needs of the people, but we certainly can separate overhead capital requirements for construction from actual operations. And those are areas that I think are absolutely mandatory as we, you know, seek help from the governor. If he feels the same way, then I'm sure he will help us move in that direction. I don't know what the opinion is of the committee on setting, having priorities now, and also looking to funding sources. So we're not one day taking care of our fragile citizens, and the next day, you know, we have very serious situations, as the good representative presented yesterday in session. We don't want that. And, you know, nor do I want to hear that from a department like the Health and Human Services. Nor do I want to hear that we don't have a system to protect, you know, abused children and others.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that, as I mentioned in my opening comments, politics is the art of the possible. If it were possible to have this take effect for the upcoming biennium in 2003-05, and for us to utilize those principles and that sort of thing, I would gladly put it in. That's not I would gladly add a an emergency clause so that it takes effect immediately. I mean, that's not something. So that's, from my standpoint, that's not a problem. It's as I mentioned, is it possible to get the votes on the floor? The other thing is that you can look at state budgeting in two ways. One is, and I did this in 99, we had drafted House Bill 3409, which did pass out of the House, by the way, and then was stalled in the Senate. But one of the things that I did was I took those principles, many of which are in this bill, and said, okay, if I were king for a day, how would I do the state budget? And I don't know if you remember or not, but in the 99, and I know Representative Frzanski will remember this, in 99 for education, for example, the call was for $4.95 billion to adequately fund our K-12 education system. Utilizing the principles that we had put together, I had education funded at $4.95 billion. I had DHS funded so that our elderly and disabled and medically fragile children, which has become a big issue for me, had those areas funded. We had our state police adequately funded. We had our prison system adequately funded as far as what I had put together. And we still had a reserve to put back for budget situations that might come up of right around $500 million. So it is possible, but as I mentioned, setting priorities and that sort of thing does become the art of the possible. So when we take a bill to the floor, as far as the actual budget bill is concerned, there may be times that we disagree with how those resources are going to be used, and we register that disagreement vis-a-vis our no vote. And if there are enough no votes on the floor, then the budget doesn't pass, and then we can send it back to committee for adjustments. However, if there aren't enough no votes, then you end up not on the prevailing side. So that and in other cases, there will be budgets that come forward, and you're in full agreement with how the resources are being utilized, and that is registered on the floor with a yes vote. And once again, if there's enough yes votes, then that budget issue or item passes. I think that this is something that is going to. The intent of this hearing is to kind of start us out at the 50,000 foot level, if you will, kind of relating it to aircraft, which I know, Madam Chair, that you are very familiar with. And starting out at the 50,000 foot level and sort of taking that very broad view. And then as we start working on this and figuring out what some of our priorities will be as a body and that sort of thing, we're going to start bringing it down, and we'll come down to the 40,000 and 30,000 and so on foot level, and eventually, one of the things that we have to do is figure out on this in this process and in recreating our budget model what kind of a glide path we can put this on, so that when we touch down and we have a down real close look at all of our budget structures and how they're working, that we can make those work within a budget model that everyone at least a majority of the body and the governor are willing to subscribe to. And then it's up to the agencies to do that. Now, in terms of applying this to the 2003-2005 budget period, what we have to recognize is that the opportunity for the agencies to utilize these principles is lost for the 2003-2005 time frame, and the reason is because the agencies had to have their budget requests into the governor's office by November 1 of 2002. So their ability to, and all they can do is respond at this point, but their ability to craft their budgets utilizing these principles for the 2003-2005 budget season is over. It's gone. However, by putting these principles into place, when they are preparing their budgets for the 2005-2007, then the agencies will be able to be fully involved in utilizing these principles in terms of building their budgets for the 2005-2007, and also in setting out their strategic plans for how they will spend into the future. And it has to include agencies such as DHS. It has to include them. And one of the things that they're going to have to look at, for example, is what is our population doing from a standpoint of our elderly? And we know from work that the Oregon Progress Board is doing, for example, that our population is aging, and that we have more and more baby boomers, if you will, that are reaching the age of retirement. And as they reach the age of retirement, they're going and moving into being elderly, we, as baby boomers, are going to require more state services, and there's going to be a cost associated with that. So let's start figuring out kind of what that, as best as we can. I mean, forecasting is you know, looking into your magic ball and trying to sort of figure out what you're going to be able to do in the future. But by, and there is a science to it, but by no means is it exact. And I think we have to recognize that, and that's why I responded to Representative Prezansky with regards to the plan, that 5-year strategic plan, or whatever period we choose, being a rolling period, as opposed to, okay, let's let this one run for 5 years, and then in 4 years we'll figure out how we're going to do the next 5 years. We can't do that, and that's why it needs to be a rolling time frame.
Thank you, Representative Kremel. I just kind of in summarizing my feelings, if I could just reiterate with my persistence, which you are used to, one more time. I just want to say that I think it's critically important that we take the leadership. I think that's the purpose of this committee. And as you say, find out what's right, do what's right, so things turn out right this session. And it can only happen if we make some critical changes now. And I know perfection is very close to procrastination. You know, we can wait till we have a zero-based budgeting system, or a perfect, combination of zero-based budgeting with performance measurement. And I'm certainly, and as you know, in no way a pessimist. I'm an optimist that we could do that. However, based on the time limit we have, I think we can still require at this time in this budgeting process that we look at state priorities, designated funding sources, establish those. And, you know, as someone who's, you know, been in business for many, many years, you know, I required our 27 businesses, you know, to live within 80% of their budget. You know, then you have, you know, that contingency that's available for all these sorts of things we never expect to happen, like utilities going up, interest rates, oil prices, you know, and certainly in aviation, those are very impacting. We don't require that. You know, in the past, as I understand it, 10 years, we've spent everything that we earned. So there is no policy requiring, other than education now, requiring us to live within a certain percentage of our budget, to utilize the certain percentage, for example, that 80% of educational dollars should be spent in the classroom. I mean, we have no requirements. Or that other agencies, you know, should not have overhead exceeding 15% to 20%, whatever, you know, we decide. So I'm saying there are priorities that I feel need to happen now. I believe this good governor, who is also a businessman, fully understands this. And, I'm just betting on his genius and his concern for change. And also, we have not considered the burden of administrative rules, you know, that we've allowed to encumber our budgets, whether we want to, you know, recognize that or not. We've not chosen to eliminate mandates. We eliminated them on cities, counties, and districts, but, you know, not on schools and certainly not on businesses. You know, so what we've got is about, you know, I don't know how many years before I got here, you know, you and Representative Prezansky certainly know better than I do, you know, what is the multitude of expensive mandates we have on business? I had to have a bill on that. But anyway, I'm just saying we need to know that. And same thing, for example, in the process with the Oregon Department of Transportation. You know, we had legislative intent. We gave them $500 million of bonding capacity to jumpstart the economy. And then they awarded projects without having a criteria for the evaluation of those, you know, projects. I'm just saying, you know, that was money we gave with a certain intent. It didn't happen. So apparently, you know, we need to talk about our process of, you know, allowing projects to be let, as well as our, when I hear that we're purchasing outside the state of Oregon what we could produce ourselves, it really, you know, likewise bothers me. So I'm just saying there are a number of changes that need to be made. One last issue, and for the new members of our committee, what is very worrisome to me is that we never get a budget in its totality. I'll give you an example. In one budget, we had money for OPB, cash, $3 million in the last session. A few bills later or prior, we had a bill loan in OPB, $7 million. Well, why didn't it come together? I mean, why wasn't that under one auspice? Here's a loan, here's cash. Well, based on what we heard from the good representative Hayden, I mean, it's illegal for us to give OPB by statute money, but we did it anyway. So, unfortunately, we didn't see in one bucket that it was really a total of $10 million, nor, you know, did we say, should we be funding that? Likewise with that, in the budget, last budget bills came pork, which I greatly resented. You know, while we were, it was critical that we spend the little money we had on critically needed priority services in order for those budgets, you know, to be finalized. We had to accept actions that were not for the good of the whole of the state. I'm just saying, to me, there are policies that need to be corrected now, and I hope that we'll consider perhaps this bill 2148 as a master project, but in the interim we could affect parts of this concept in a way that they could concur in this session. Representative Mabry.
Just a comment, if I may. First of all, I think this is a good piece of work. I commend you for having it so concise. I mean, it could be a huge deal, and you've done a good job.
Thank you.
And so my comments maybe are nuts and bolts rather than bigger pictures, but building on the concept of Representative Nelson's continuity, not seeing piecemeal, but over. As you went through it, the thing that came to mind, and understand I'm trying to compare Wasco County, where I have real familiarity of their little $7 million budget, to the state budget. But thinking about that a few years ago when we were making drastic cuts in county government and thinking in terms of, you know, closing jails and laying off the deputies and those kind of things, we started looking at some of the little fragmented departments' budgets, and we found that the clerk's office, for example, had come to the conclusion that they're working with 4- and 5- and 6-year-old computers, and there's a real good chance a couple of them could explode at any time, and so they had a little reserve over here for computer replacement if that happened. Not that they were going to spend it, but it was there just in case. And we found the assessor's office and the sheriff's office and you know, the 20 departments also had these little pockets of money for that kind of thing sitting around in case. So by the time we got through adding all those up, maybe we had little reserve accounts sitting out there for 40 or 50 computers. And the likelihood of our little county replacing 2 or 3 was a lot. And so we were faced with, if we leave these little pockets of reserve money around, we have to lay off a deputy or 2 deputies or you know, something like that. But if we bring them all together as a unit and say, let's have a reserve account for 4 computers in case, in a centralized place, we have this excess money left over for real programs that make a difference. And I think that is a tendency and a concern I would have with your reserve within departments or programs, because I think we could end up with a whole bucket full of money over here that we could use for real programs, state police or something, that we don't have the ability to budget because it's just sitting there as a reserve account. The other edge of that was that because there was money budgeted, there is always the tendency, the temptation, if you will, to say, well, you know, it would really be great for our department to have a Framis whatever a Framis is. But I wouldn't want to budget for one, but the money is there, so
that's right.
Gosh, let's spend a little bit of this money for this Framis that we always wanted. And so, you know, there's just temptations there. So I guess I'm just kind of maybe echoing a little bit of what Representative Nelson said, that we want to be careful that we have an opportunity to see the big picture instead of just little chopped up pieces. Because, as I said originally, the budget brought forth by our county clerk with that reserve in there was absolutely reasonable. But when you looked at it as a whole and took all those and added up, they weren't reasonable. And we were able to save some critical, crucial programs by looking at more as a whole thing instead of fragments. But a good piece of work.
Madam Chair and Representative Mabry, I agree with you, and that is there is always a danger in that type of an approach, and that's one of the reasons why it's absolutely imperative that we have a chain of command. And so, for example, if you have well, I used to work at Western Oregon University. I was in the athletic department there, and I was responsible for a budget, for the athletic training budget. It was, you know, at any point that the athletic director, who was the overall athletic department budget manager, could certainly look at my budget and say, you know, you're holding too much in reserve here, and I'm pulling some of those dollars to put over here because our softball program is needing an infusion of money to do to buy more bats. I mean, just tossing out an example. And so you and then, you know, for the divisional chair of the university, for example, the divisional chair for academic programs, to look at the various budgets and maybe tell the athletic director, well, you're holding too much in reserve over here, and our biology department is needing some new electron microscopes, and they need an infusion of cash, and I'm pulling some of those dollars from you and placing them over here. And then the university president saying, well, divisional chairs, over here in liberal arts, you're holding too much for drama, and I need some money over here in student services, so I'm pulling some of those dollars. And so along the chain of command, and then when it does finally get to us as a legislature, and us saying, you know, Department of Education, you're holding too much over here, and we need help over in public safety, and we are pulling some of those dollars and we're placing them over here in public safety. So understanding that because of that chain of command, and everybody in the chain has a responsibility. But that's also one of the reasons why I put a cap in here as far as the amount of reserve. And there again, maybe all we want to put in there is a 2% cap. Maybe all we want to put in is a 1% cap. I mean, so that's something that I think is one of the issues that we need to talk about as we are putting this budget model reform together. And Madam Chair, I would just say that in your comments, and I appreciate them very much, but you have very eloquently made the case for why we need to pass this bill. And so I appreciate that, and I understand that we need to involve everyone in the conversation as far as how we do go about this. And you will never get an argument from me about making this effective upon its passage. But I think that we may have other members that have some consternation about that, and giving the agencies, saying this is how we legislatively this session have built the budgets utilizing these utilizing principles that have been put together in this bill. This is how you're going to do it the next time you present your budget to us. But for this time around, this is what we've done. And so the agencies and the public have a greater understanding then of the process that we went through as far as budgeting. From a standpoint of pork, you know, in politics, I don't know if you ever get rid of pork. But just remember, when it's in my district, I'm taking home the bacon. When it's in your district, it's pork.
Thank you, Mr. Crummell, or Representative Crummell. The last thing I just want to mention is that we don't have an incentivizing program for agencies. I hate the, old politicians will tell me, well, Donna, just watch the last 3 months of the fiscal year. It's this old use it or lose it, so you're going to see non-essential spending because we have no reward, for an agency who conserves, who, returns funds, and nor do we have the intra-agency capacity to transfer funds like I would, like to see. For example, in the last budget period, we found $12 billion sitting in 52 funds. To the best of my knowledge, $12 billion is still sitting in 52 funds in state government. And to me, when that's equivalent to an entire biennium, I want to know, why is it sitting there? Why can't we utilize some of those monies? Why can't we utilize them in economic development, for collateral? I don't know, but I think it's something we need to know about. We need to cure, and I'm going to look forward to opportunity with this committee, the public, and certainly, the agencies as they, come forward to present their concepts of different types of budgeting and performance management and talk about their overhead and what's in it. I think it'll give us a greater appreciation, for what they're going through. At the same time, hearing from the public, I think it's going to certainly help us have the facilities and the documents so the public can better understand the budget process. Last night, we were accused, the legislature, of being responsible for these cuts that are being taken care of in Measure 28, for example. Well, I explained to them it was my understanding, that those cuts were not clearly the work of the legislature because agencies and the governor had determined, which cuts were being made. And I said, we need to remember we're all in it together. So I think that's what we want to make happen in this type of process. Are there any other questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, I would just mention and say thank you for mentioning the incentives. And I think that one of the ways that you incentivize your budget managers is by allowing them to have reserves that they don't necessarily lose just because a magical date has come about. But as Representative Mabry had talked about also, is that there are times that the upper budget managers need to look at those at those and make sure that there isn't a bucket of money sitting there that could be utilized in other programs and be willing to move some of those funds out, the lower budget manager not being penalized for trying to be a good steward of the public resources. And I think that and as far as incentivizing work and that sort of thing, that's probably an issue for a different bill and probably for another day. But there are ways to do that, and I think people that budget managers that are allowed to develop a reserve without the fear of losing it, knowing that they can earmark money and that sort of thing, I think is very helpful. And I think most budget managers out there really do want to do the right thing. I would love to get rid of this idea of the use it or lose it mentality. I think that does more harm than good. And I can remember, again, when I was at Western Oregon, being called several times by the budget analyst for our department and being told you have X amount of unencumbered funds, and if you're going to order anything, you need to order it now so that it's on the dock by June 30th, because if these dollars are not utilized, you will lose them, and potentially your budget will be reduced for the next budget cycle. And I think, those are threats and or maybe they're promises. I'm not sure which. But the thing is that as a, I was being encouraged to spend money that I didn't have to spend. and that could have been utilized somewhere else in the department for another use and for potentially a better use. And I think that's one of the goals that I think we as a legislature can set out, is not penalizing budget managers and doing what we can to try to eliminate the use it or lose it mentality. Madam Chair, thank you very much.
Representative Frommel, and I just want to support Representative Mabry one more time on this issue. During the special sessions, we heard from the media, who had or had not actually done the research, that the state had spent some $500 million in consultant fees. You know, I mean, here's an example. If every division's doing their own thing, until you bring it all together, you have no concept, you know, that has happened. And it sure be more wonderful to fund, in my opinion, Head Start and use the expertise of our own people without having to pay exorbitant fees for outside sources. Any other questions? Want to thank you very much, Representative Frommel. I'm going to close the informational hearing on House Bill 2148 at this time.